There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Ladies and gentlemen, hello and welcome to the Hall of Fame panel discussion. What a beautiful setting for utterly horrible weather. I'm so sorry. It's not my fault, even though I've already had that accusation hurtled at me. Apparently I brought it back from Monaco. I thought it did quite well at Monaco, but apparently it wasn't the weather required here. So I apologise, but it's not as bad as it was at the Nürburgring, for anybody that saw that. So we're okay. Now, few sports create rivalries quite like motorsport. We all know that. We've all seen them. We've all loved them as we've gone through the years of motorsport. Yes, okay, in football you might get, you know, your local derbies, your cities versus your Uniteds. And certainly in things like boxing and rugby, you get your Wales versus England. But nothing quite lives up, I think, to the rivalries that you get within motorsport. If you think back to them, some of the most passionate, occasionally lethal combinations that we've seen, from Senna and Prost to nowadays with Hamilton and Rosberg, there have been some amazing rivalries, and they run really through the DNA of motorsport, don't they? Creating heroes and villains, winners and losers, and crucially, a sense that although racing, for most of us, yes, it's a form of entertainment, but for the drivers, for the riders, it's a whole lot more important than that. So to explore this further today, we're lucky enough to have a fantastic panel arranged for us. We'll do some question and answers at the end, so get your thinking caps on and decide what you'd like to ask these fantastic gentlemen. But without further ado, let me introduce them. They don't really need any introduction at all, but I'll do it anyway because that's what I'm here to do. So we'll start with Derek Bell, of course, five-time Le Mans winner, two-time world sports car champion. Next to him, Tom Christiansen, known as Mr. Le Mans. He won it so many times we've all lost count, but he's pretty good at it. Let me just go there. Next to him, we have Darren Turner, former McLaren Formula One test driver and current Aston Martin Works driver as well, and a Motorsport Magazine columnist, of course. Matt Oxley is next to him, our Motorsport Magazine's bike columnist, who's also had the distinction of competing at the Isle of Man TT. So we know when it comes to nerves of steel, box ticked. Jackie Oliver follows, former Formula One driver, founder of the Arrows Formula One team and Le Mans and Can-Am winner. And then we also have Damien Smith, who is the editor of Motorsport Magazine and here to try and keep the peace, because my hands are too small to fight. So that takes us to the panel discussion. And Derek, maybe we can start with you, because you're sat next to me, so it's convenient. But you're probably more famous for your partnership with Jackie X than any particular other rivalries. But was there any rivalry within that partnership, really, when it came down to it?
Oh, they can hear me. I was waiting for you to pass the microphone. Anyway, excuse me. Well, it's a strange thing because I don't believe we had great rivalries in those days. We were trying to beat the other cars. I think in Tom's era, and probably Darren's, they're chasing their teammates to try and prove they're better. In our day, we just wanted to win the race, and we did it the best way possible by having two really good drivers. I was always in awe of Jackie X. I felt he was somebody that should have been Formula One world champion, most incredibly talented driver, and so quick and was so so capable of turning in fast laps and great drives that I had to drive with him. When I drove with him, I seemed to win a lot of races, which meant he was really good. But I didn't make any mistakes, and therefore we won races. But there was a bit of competition, but I never let it show. And when there was there'd be an article in the papers in Europe, it would say X wins at Spa, and I go, shit, I'm sure I was in that car. And then underneath in small print, Derek Bell, you know, of England, of Pagham, England, also was there, you know. And I used to detest being in Jackie's shadow, as I called it. So thereafter, we had this sort of personal joke between us, which still exists today, 30 years later, where he says that we talk to each other about being in his shadow. But in the beginning, I was. But I, in all honesty, I think I developed into a better driver being with him, learned a lot from him, and ended up being as quick as he was. And we ended up with some great victories. So, you know, there was a rivalry, but it wasn't a personal thing that I got to dislike the other person or would wreck the car. I mean, the whole point is to get to the car at the end of the race without hitting things. And I have a distinct feeling these days, because of the sort of racing that there is, that you don't often get to the end of the race because of the rivalries between two cars in the same team. And we saw a few, didn't we, at the weekend at the Nürburgring. So I know Darren and Tom will speak differently, but I'm probably from another era when gentlemen were gentlemen. And I enjoyed it, and I'm glad I got through that period, you know, and it was fantastic.
Tom? Probably no. The worst question to ask you. A gentleman, still gentleman?
No, I just said, I mean, it's quite difficult to come after Derek when you give him the questions first. So,
you could have sat here, but you said I don't sit next to women, you said.
No, but I was... No, I was.
Well, don't let me too close to her, is actually what you said.
No, I said you are faster than me off track too. And that's why you're sitting where you are. And obviously, I don't know if you are from a different era. I mean, looking at you, you don't look any older than we do, so I don't think so.
Now your eyes are going. That's the only problem for you.
I think, obviously... racing in general, I mean, there's so many classes, there's so many more racing drivers nowadays than there were back then when they were, in a way, I mean, even before, obviously, Derek and Jackie's and Jackie Oliver's time, it was a lot about, let's say they were pioneers in a way before that. And nowadays you have rivalry already from karting, trying to break in and to capture some help and sponsorship to go through the sport. So nowadays, I think you already at a very young age, you know you have to deliver. And that pressure you see on people, and that's, of course, a little bit of modern time. And it's a little bit sad, obviously, because you don't see people maybe enjoy it as much today as they actually do, because you have to do it to deliver at a very, very... You should back then too, but they were pioneers, and that was very much the early part of racing, which very much is the heritage of our sport. So we have to take care that people enjoy, and when they enjoy, you can go back to something like, speaking with Darren about Nürburgring, you want to have circuits which are still giving something. You want to see it from the spectators. You don't want to see huge runoff or asphalt runoff where people can just go wherever they want. There's a lot of things where we have to see. Maybe we have stepped a little bit too far. Obviously, I'd take it a bit broader, but basically, into rivalry today, everyone is a rival entering the gate of any circuit. We do it in the interest of the sport, and maybe that needs to shine a little bit more through. The media is part of it as well. The media ask the questions faster than ever before. You have already seen it running three or four times and being discussed by experts when there has been something of an on-track incident. So there's a lot more pressure going on than probably there were earlier, at least or even earlier in my career. I could still sometimes get away with, I don't know what happened on that part. Nobody can get away with anything today on the track. And that creates controversy even though that it might not be there when the people leave the gate at the circuit and go back to the hotel where they have to stay and share a dinner. I remember a great rivalry, as you said. I didn't know that was exactly the talk today, but I had a great rivalry with Rickard Rydell. It's a Swede driving in Japan for Formula 3 back in 1993. We had the opening race of the Formula 3 championship. We were both driving for Team Toms, and that first race, we were not very friendly to each other. But we had to share a 3.5-hour drive back in a Toyota Corolla. And we didn't talk from Suzuka until Nagoya. And Nagoya, we had to talk because I was driving the car and I really want to get into the Dunkin' Donuts. We always stopped at Dunkin' Donuts. But I thought I had won the race today, but I had been naughty to him. He was naughty to me. But if I don't go into Dunkin' Donuts, that's gonna kill our relationship a lot more than just a single race. And we did Dunkin' Donuts, and we talked a little bit from there about the incident.
Thank goodness. Brilliant.
Very good. What Tom was saying there about the rivalries today and how they're built up, basically it's the media, it's your fault. I think that's what he's saying, wasn't it?
Are you not classing yourself as now the media?
I'm an editor. It's different.
But, can take responsibility a little bit because we have to react, but we only react to what people want.
But there's a different pressure on racing drivers today, I think, in terms of the focus they're under and social media and all that kind of thing. But one of the interesting things, we've got a very sports car heavy panel here, certainly influenced by the amount of miles they've done at Le Mans, etc. Darren. The rivalries that you face today, I guess, it's the teams, isn't it? It's the manufacturers you're against with Aston Martin. Driver-wise, I think sports car racing is the closest in modern motorsport to how it used to be in the past, that you all get on pretty well most of the time. Would that be fair?
Yeah, I think it is. I think, as a driver for a manufacturer, you're obviously there to do a job for that manufacturer. So all my times that I've been at Le Mans, it's Corvette has always been our main rivalry. So when it was the Ferrari, we were in the Ferraris to begin with, and then the Aston Martin. Corvette's been the mainstay of that sort of class, and they've always been the guys that we're trying to beat. And there's Porsche and the Ferrari, and sometimes it's right now Ferrari on a bit of a roll. So, they're our main competition. But if it always goes back to it's America versus Britain, it's Aston against Corvette, and that's meant that we've had a lot of fun over the years as well. And I enjoy that rivalry. I think if you don't enjoy the competition, then you just want to turn up and get a trophy, then that's not the best way of going racing. So the fact that they've always been there, been very strong and kept us on our toes, and sometimes we've beaten them and sometimes they've beaten us, it just means that every time you go back, you just know what you're up against, really, which is going to be a big fight.
And this weekend, you're going to Le Mans for the test day ahead of the big race later in the month. And you've got Ford coming back this time. There's been quite a bit of controversy about Ford's GT, which is it a true GT in the sense that the Aston is? And there's a little bit of early niggle there, isn't there?
I'll let you know after Le Mans if it was a true sports car or not. I think that it's the way that the class is going to go. Effectively, the Ferrari, the Porsche, the Aston Martin, they're all production road cars. And the Ford is, if I'm polite, saying it's a homologation special. But it's low volume, carbon chassis. Nothing else in the class is carbon chassis. And they're built. I don't even know if they've got the road car yet. I think they've got a few of them, but the race cars are out there now, and that's going to be obviously who we're up against. Yeah. And it's going to be interesting because they've got the balance of performance in our class and our championship. Hopefully, the ACO have done a great job and made sure that all the cars that are out there, the Corvette, the Ferrari, the Aston Martin, and the Ford, are all on a fairly level playing field. Because then at least the racing's good, and then we can get some wheel-to-wheel action, which is what we want to have. But going on the rivalry with teammates and that, I've seen different cars over at Le Mans, and you just think, right, they've put the fastest guns all in one car, and that's the car that's going to crash. Mm. So it's because the ego, they're fast, they've got their egos, and every time the next guy goes out, he's going to want to go quicker than the guy before. And you can pretty much guarantee that one will be the one that goes off. I think we have a nice balanced team within Aston. We've got fast guys spread across the ones. You've got more experienced guys, and that's me now. I've slowly developed into being the old boy in the team. And you've got the... I know, it's like quite a bit of grey, yeah. But it's not going there just yet, so I'm happier. And so I think when you're a team boss at Le Mans, you need to put your guys, spread them out to make sure you take away that inner team rivalry. You want to beat your other car, but you need to be working together to make that possible. But certainly, if you put all the quick guys in one car, it's a recipe for disaster.
Yeah.
But it used to be.
What?
I don't think it was in our era a recipe for disaster.
Putting the fast guys.
No, I think it was good having them in pairs, because I believe what happens now, and I saw it with the Bentley team, which I was involved with back in the beginning of the 2000s, and we had a pretty different variety of drivers in, no names mentioned, but I know you'd had a star driver, and he was always out doing the fast laps, and the others were always trying to do the laps, and he could do them easily. And the other guys are trying to do his time, so they're stressing the car. And I've always felt you want the paired drivers, so they're neither of them. They're both driving at the same pace, so they're stressing the car the same amount. If you've got a star driver and then two others, and it's got worse with three, of course, because you're never going to get three drivers the same in reality. And you're right, nobody puts three drivers the same type in a car, but in fact, that car generally should not go off the road, because you've got the three best drivers and they're going to be competing to beat everybody else, and they will. And those three can just take the car out in the lead. I think it happened with you, Tom. You had some fabulous teammates. And I think that you could get out in the lead and maintain that lead. As I say, it worries me when you're out trying to get the less experienced driver to do the same times as the quicker one, who's pacing himself at a high speed, but perhaps there's always a bit more there, like he could go a tenth or two quicker if he really, really had to. But he's going to stress the car. So, but you've got the other guy who's stressing himself like that and is stressing the car to get within 2 seconds. That's all I would say. And I've said that to the Bentley drivers at a briefing. I said, it's a team effort. You've got to allow all three to try and get up to speed. And I'm not sure it's allowed to happen. Who was I talking to at the weekend? And he said he'd only done three laps in practice, at the Nürburgring in 2 days because of the crappy conditions and the number of cars. That isn't really very helpful, because when he gets out there, he's still learning the track, if you like, or learning the car and the conditions, and he's going to be stressing it. I think it's great when you can get in a rhythm. You know that when you drove with two drivers or you drive on your own, you get in a really good rhythm and a high-speed rhythm, and I think it matters to have parity in the drivers. But I know what you're saying, but I feel that.
Maybe that's just luck. I'd never thought about that. Maybe that has been
just because you're always the best.
No. But I mean, I drove for Bentley as well, if you remember. But I think it's very much important that the three drivers, which are today, that you get on.
Yeah.
That you get on and very early in with me at Le Mans, from the first time I was there with Alboreto and Johansson. We made sure that we leave the gate together and we drive into the circuit together. And this I've done with all my crews whenever I have driven. That means that it's bad to take problems to bed. There's always going to be things. But when you go back, it's obviously nice to have at least, maybe not necessarily stopped at Dunkin' Donuts, but at least going back to the hotel, you will discuss what happened during the day.
But you're there to win the race.
Yes.
You're there as teammates. Well, it's called a team event, and you're trying to win it. So all three of you need to be on the same sheet. Perhaps that's what you need to get into a really bloody good team.
I was just thinking about the...
what did I say? Sorry. We'll have to help you get in a really good team so you can do what we're talking about.
The comment there about not taking your problems to bed, that sounds more like the husband and wife drama.
Come on, we all know team relationships and driver relationships are pretty much like a second marriage anyway. You're closer to them, you spend more time with them, and you have more domestics, maybe?
No, I mean, I was really lucky. My teammate's now gone to Ford, but Stefan Mucke was... I was with, like, for...
Leave you, don't
yeah, yeah, there. It's a bit of a divorce.
I think the arrangement's more flexible.
And we travelled around the world for 5 years together, and probably did spend as much time with him as I do with my family. So if you can't get on, then it becomes difficult. The only thing that we had to get sorted out quite early on was the hire car situation, because he's horrendous on the road. So a couple of races in, I said, I cannot go in a hire car with you. I needed my own hire car. So after that, I did all the driving. But, it wasn't a nice experience.
Jackie, let's bring you in, if you don't mind. Because we've spoken about what it's like from a driver's point of view, but I remember speaking to Gary Anderson once, and he said when he had warring drivers working for him, he used to just lock them in the back of a van until they'd sorted out their differences. You know, what did you do in the Arrows team if you did have problems with drivers or strops, egos? Was there anything like that?
Well, I'm sort of actor turned director, didn't I? I mean, I was in front of the camera and then behind, so to speak. So I've had experiences in both regards. The thing I've noticed is that sportsmen, there are footballers and rugby players, and they're team players. Golfers and racing drivers are not team players. They're totally self-centred, and the best ones are the ones that are very competitive. So that's what you're dealing with, and every team has to deal with those individuals that want to win. And to make matters worse, you can't get a driver to admit, if he's got exactly the same car as his teammate, why he's slower. So that tends to lead to all sorts of problems. And as Tom mentioned, you know, now with cameras and telemetry, the drivers have got nowhere to hide. In my day, we used to have lots of excuses, and there was no way they were going to find out whether I was telling the truth or not, because there was no telemetry. So the game has changed a little bit, hasn't it? But I've had two experiences. One of team rivalry when I was driving Can-Am with Shadow in the United States. And I had the team to myself as a single-car team for many years. But there's expanded Don Nichols of Shadow. Got George Former, an American driver, to drive in a second car. And it was the year I won the championship in 73. Now, the trouble is with Americans and English drivers is that I had what's called sarcasm. And Americans never get sarcasm. And I used to be a bit sarcastic with George when he was behind me or he didn't win. And he started to complain. I won both races, in the car and also in the garage, because he was a big chap. So when I said some sarcastic things to him, I had to run, because he was going to put one on me. And of course, being a lot smaller, I could run quicker than him. And it turned out I could drive quicker than him in the car as well, and I won the championship. And he never got over it, George. Even when I see him now, he never got over it. So the worst thing you can do with competitive people is beat them.
And you never remind him, Jackie, when you do see him, I'm sure.
Well, that's the problem with sarcasm, isn't it, really? You can't let it go, can you? From a team owner's point of view, I had a similar experience with when Derek Warwick and Eddie Cheever drove for me in the BMW cars, BMW turbo cars. And we were very competitive at the high-speed circuits, and at Monza particularly. And the only teams we couldn't beat at Monza were the Ferraris. So we were running third and fourth in the race, pit stops coming up. We'd already discussed that because of high speed and no speed limits in the pit lane then, we had to bring one car in after the other. And we agreed that what we should do is whoever was in front of the other would be the first to come in. So when it came round to the pit stops, and there was rivalry between Eddie and Derek, when it came to that, we decided to pull Derek in first, and the engineers were talking to each other, and then they said, well, Derek, we're not going to bring Derek in, now let's bring Eddie in. So on the radio, I heard the engineer say, Eddie, pit. No, he said. So I got on the phone. I said, Eddie, we've changed it. You've got a pit. Silence. So I thought, right, now what do we do? Call Derek in. So we called Derek in. Who came into the pits first with Derek behind him? Eddie. Right? That is the way drivers think. Right? They're always looking for the advantage. And the reasons why they do this thing is because they always think, maybe I can't beat that guy that's driving with me, because in my heart of hearts, I'm not going to say so, I know he's better than me. And that's what caused the rivalry. And I think that is going on, from my analysis of it, I think that's what's going on with Lewis and Rosberg. I think Rosberg probably knows that that tenth of a second, that extra energy that Lewis makes, he probably knows deep down that sooner or later Lewis is going to beat him. And I think that came out when, if anybody watched the TV coverage, beautifully done by an analysis of what was going on at the start of the Chinese Grand Prix, I think it was, wasn't it?
Barcelona.
With the controllers.
Yeah.
There you had a situation where you had two different approaches to the drivers. Rosberg used his energy recovery system at the start, but had to do energy recovery, and Lewis didn't. And Lewis went for the gap. I would think before looking at that onboard coverage, it looked to me as though Rosberg was fiddling down on his steering wheel, making sure he could get energy recovery going for the straight, so to keep Lewis behind him. And then when he looked in the mirror, he saw Lewis right there. What did he do? Moved over on him. And that, I don't think you can get that. You've got that attitude between teammates and between race drivers. Lewis, if there's a gap, he's going to go for it. And the team lost out.
That rivalry between them and that incident in Barcelona, it seemed to me, maybe the panel agree or disagree, but it was inevitable that that was going to happen, because in that scenario, Nico was in the wrong mode, basically. Lewis saw the gap and he had to go for it. And Nico, with the rivalry they've had over the last 3 years, that niggly kind of petty stuff that's gone on, he couldn't let Lewis get by. He had to defend. And there was only going to be one outcome in that. I mean, I don't know if that is that... Is that how other people saw it, or could it have been avoided? Anyone?
David, did you not watch the coverage on the TV?
Yeah, I saw it. I just think it's one of those moves, 50-50. Lewis did what he had to do, go for a move. Nico did what he had to do, which is defend. But maybe Lewis had the option of going to the left rather than the right on the door that shut him. So, I mean, it all happens really quick, and it's very easy to sit back and analyse these things after and see, like you said, like 100 replays and look at all the data and everything. These guys are making their decisions in fractions of seconds, and it's not always going to be the right decision. So I think both drivers did exactly what they should have been doing at that time, and ultimately they came together. But it is going to happen, isn't it? If you've got two guys that are fighting for a world championship, and it's not like one driver is number one and one guy is number two. They're both equals in that team. Why should they not do what they have to do to beat their teammate? And on that occasion, it was what it was going to be. It was going to be an accident, wasn't it? So I certainly don't look at it and go, that was 100% Lewis's fault or that was 100% Nico's fault. I thought they just did exactly what they should be doing in that scenario, really. So,
what about the calculating driver? Because if you remember the Senna-Prost incident, and I think he was at Japan, whether it was true or not, I don't know, but they were on the front row together. I think they were both in McLaren team, if I remember rightly.
McLaren and Ferrari, 1990.
And they whoever won the race was going to win the championship, and they took each other out on the first corner. I suppose that is rivalry, isn't it? I'm going to get into the corner first, and if you take me out, it's your loss because I've got more points than you. So I think that's the animal you're dealing with. Is it more prevalent now amongst drivers? I'm not sure about that. The only thing is, I mean, I drove with Jimmy Clark and Jackie Stewart and Graham Hill, but I was a younger driver then, and I didn't see it. It only seemed to start to happen in the late 70s. So maybe it's a new phenomenon.
Well, Matt, would you agree with that from the two-wheeled world, that there was a change?
Yeah, I think everything that's been said about cars kind of fits across to bikes, and then a little bit more, probably. And I would agree, yeah, I think... Hailwood and Agostini back in the 60s, they were huge rivals, but, you know, they managed to still go out for a beer in the evening and that kind of stuff. And I think, yeah, as the 70s came on, I think there's more money comes in, there's more media comes in, the pressure goes up and the egos go up and so on. And yeah, a lot of, and I think it has got worse and worse. And I think, you know, especially the last couple of years in MotoGP, we've had a lot of collisions and that kind of stuff. And basically, the problem is the bikes are all now so similar, you know. They're on the same tyres, they're now using the same ECUs. So the drivers are looking, the riders, sorry, they're not looking for a tenth, they're looking for hundredths and thousandths. And to actually make a pass on somebody is incredibly difficult because everybody's coming out, everybody's got traction control, so they're all coming out of the corner at the same speed and they've all got about the same horsepower. So it's very difficult to draft and get by. So basically they've got to come by on the brakes and the guy's going to try and shut the door. And, you know, if the guy really wants to get past, he's going to, no, I'm still coming. No, you're not. Yes, I am. No, I'm not. And then, bang, there you go. And whose fault is it? Just like you said, it's both their fault, you know. Either of them could have pulled out of the situation, but they decided not to. And I think a lot of that is, and I'm not so sure, I don't know a lot about car racing, whether that is the same in cars, but I think, the machinery is so close now, so... You know, 20 years ago, bikes races were being won by 30 seconds, and by now they're all won by a tenth and two tenths and stuff. And so, I just think it's kind of inevitable that you're going to get more of that kind of stuff. You know, more collisions, more. You know, luckily the tracks are very safe now in Moto Grand Prix, so they can all. And I think that's another reason. As Casey Stoner, who won the title in 2007 and 2010, 11. You know, he says that it's got too safe now, so the riders are happy to take risks that they wouldn't have been happy to do sort of 20, 30 years ago when they might have gone into a barrier or whatever. Now they think, well, the worst that's going to happen is I'm going to break a collarbone or he's going to break a collarbone, so here we go, you know. So there's all those sort of things about with the safety, you know, actually by going so far with the safety, you're actually encouraging people to ride more dangerously. So there's it's quite an interesting kind of point that we've reached, I think.
Yeah. Is that the same for you, TK, and what you see? Because you steward in F1 and you know, you're part of the FIA with them, but you've also done Le Mans. So can you echo the same things with both of those?
Yeah, I think I can. When you look at, let's say, like a typical really junior class where you have all the talent from all around the world, it's they are more or less coming through Formula 3, and that's what we, I think, where we really have to keep an eye on these, and what we are keeping an eye on these days, very much so. You need the respect from, and let's say, an impact or accident seems to be a lot less than maybe the rivalry itself. So basically you, when you see three cars approaching a corner, nowadays you know they're all going to go for the corner because they can all go wide and probably escape the corner, whereas you, when you see barriers, or it's a bit different.
If you think about your sports and the great rivalries that have been there, I just wonder what you would put at the top of the list if you look at those rivalries. Maybe we start with you. And who do you think were the couple, the warring couple, the couple that kind of bore everything together?
In what I, where I was? Goodness, I don't know. Because, I mean, I was lucky to be in the best team most of the time. And so the warring went on behind us. I mean, you know, I was with the people I drove with, when you think about it. You know, in my early days with Jackie, I'm talking about sports cars now. I mean, I did do a lot of Formula 2 and a bit of Formula 1, but not as much as Jackie did. But, I mean, you know, he raced with Pedro Rodriguez and I raced with Joe Siffert, and they were two very capable, the most amazing sports car drivers of that era. So I had respect for them because I was coming into it fresh.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
He had little, he had less respect for any of us, but you are. He did pick that up, did you? No, he, I mean, but we were both young.
That's why we sat you so far apart. Right, yeah. We knew it would come to fisticuffs on stage.
I said he had less respect for anybody, but don't worry. No, but he and I... And we were young guys joining the Porsche team, and he had been with John Wire with the GT40, so he had got an experience of John Wire, but he was still very young. And when you go in with these older drivers that are so damn good and you're trying to just catch up with them, you have a lot of respect for them. And you knew there was the major battle was between Joe and Joe Sifford and Pedro Rodriguez. When we got up to, you know, the next era, which was the Group C stuff, there wasn't quite so much. Again, we were starting to get back to manufacturers, and during that era, Porsche really dominated it, but we had Jaguar. We had, obviously, we were Porsche. We had Porsche, Jaguar, we had Toyota coming in, we had Nissan play around, and then Mercedes. I mean, and Mazda came in and won Le Mans as well in there. So there was a lot of battles going on, but there wasn't that sort of needle that I don't think, I mean, we wanted to beat the other cars and we wanted to win Le Mans again or come second again or whatever it was, but it was slightly different than I think, and I think you have to remember, which wasn't brought up before, but with sports cars, you're not going to say anything. No, sorry, Ollie usually comes up with something that kills me, but no, one of the problems with sports car is that we have all sorts of drivers out there. I mean, there was this race this weekend that Darren was in. There were 157 cars in the race at Nürburgring, all right, it's 25 kilometres round. But there were 3, 4, 5 drivers with each team, with each car. That's a hell of a lot of people. And there really aren't that many people in motor racing that are capable of driving around the Nürburgring in the rain and the sleet and snow in the dark capably, while there's really quick cars out there and there's some pretty poor driving going on. In Formula One generally, you know exactly there are 20 cars out there or 22, and you know each driver, what he looks like, you know, can tell by his helmet, if you can see it, that is, who it is, or your team is telling you on the radio. So you know what to expect when you come across him. With us in sports cars, it was much more of that dilemma of getting used to the other drivers in the other cars and what move they might make because they didn't know where the hell they were going.
TK, big egos when you're at Le Mans?
I would say not. Le Mans is respectful in that sense. That tames a lot of things in this sense. But obviously, people overdo it, and people have overdone it over the years. I have just been, as Derek mentioned, in very good teams, very good teammates. That has been very fruitful for my focus when I go into Le Mans over the years. And for sure, there has been different teammates I've had. I mean, starting, as you say, you come in with some very experienced, some respectable teammates like Johansson and Alboreto at my first year, and then I see myself develop over all these years, and at one point there's younger drivers coming in and being teammates with me, and that obviously has been a fantastic journey, and I don't want to tire you all of that because that's obviously a very long speak, but just sitting and listening to the others, I would say that the time when I had probably, I mean, I mentioned Rydell, but I mean, the top where I had probably a tougher rivalry. I mean, the great team we had, obviously, for many years was with Capello and Magnish and myself. We had really, les trois musketeers, as we called us. We are very, very, very different personalities, but we get on very well. So that was a very, very gelling and positive experience over many years. But sitting here in the UK, I did the BTCC in 2000, And I don't think we passed each other quite some times during that season, but we never passed each other without touching. And sometimes we ended up, I think on two occasions, I missed my flight going back as I had to go to the stewards with this other gentleman. And I don't want to mention name as you are in England. So nobody.
I mean, we don't mind if you wanted
no,
to
No, of course
names.
I don't want to mention. I mean, Jason Plato, he's not here. So why should I mention him? Because he will be very happy, and we have had a few beers over it, and he has been very honest about the approaches and at some circuits, and I'm just happy I was able to leave England at the final race at Silverstone in the night race and winning the for West Surrey in the Honda and sort of having the last say, even though that he was more higher in the championship. But that was a really proper rivalry, you can say.
Darren, you must have some great Plato Neil stories. I mean, it's what legends are made of, isn't it?
Yeah, that fight's been going on for some years, hasn't it? So I don't think there's any love lost. I mean, I was lucky enough to be JP's teammate for 3 years. So when I did touring cars for those 3 years with Sayer, if you're going to have a teammate, he is the best guy to have in touring cars. He knows all the tricks. And the thing is, he actually taught me more about the sport outside of the car with the business side as much as what I learned from him inside the car. But a great guy to have as your teammate, but I wouldn't want to be in another team trying to beat him. And I'm sure that's why that sort of conflict between JP and Matt Neal has been going on for so many years. They're very different characters, and I'm sure JP's like loves the idea of winding him up, and any opportunity he can to do it outside of the car, he seems to take that opportunity. And then on the track, it's been quite often I'd be like two or three car lengths behind and I could see it about to start. And then you know it's not going to be a little bit of contact, there's going to be a lot of contact. And I can remember one of the races at Snetterton, it lasted five corners before there was an eventual winner out of the two of them. And I think JP on this occasion one came through. But, you know, there's definitely, they don't give each other any inch on the circuit. And I think that's what makes it so exciting to watch. When you're watching it on TV and everything else, you're either in the Matt Neal camp or you're in the JP camp, and that rivalry really actually creates more of an atmosphere for the race. And I think from the spectator side, that's what makes BTC so exciting. And I think, you know, they're now having to be careful because those guys aren't going to be around forever in that championship. So hopefully there's going to be some younger guys coming through that have that same sort of charisma that those two guys have that create action on the track and some of the banter that comes after it. Because it is, sports cars is different in the way that we're not trying to, you know, crash each other off the circuit. We do it accidentally. But with BTCC, it's part of the fun, isn't it? You know, and I struggled to adapt to it because every time I'd go and do a race, I'd pull a good move, no touching of paint, no wing mirrors, and I'll be like, that was very good. And then the next corner, the guy that I've just spent three laps getting past without would just take me out. And I was like, I just don't get this racing. But I think if I went back, I'd get it. But at the time I was there, I didn't get it. So, and it is good to watch. I love watching it. But, you know, I think you need people like JP and Matt Neal in the championship just to add that extra element of excitement.
Matt, I certainly remember when I was doing MotoGP, the wall. The wall came up between Rossi and Lorenzo. I mean, a physical wall in the garage because they just couldn't stand each other. Do you think sport needs that intensity, that rivalry? And certainly within MotoGP, we've seen it happening through the decades.
Yeah, it's it's all part of it. I mean, to me, they're still, well, we call them gladiators or whatever, you know, so you're going right back to the beginnings of, well, I guess gladiators wasn't really a sport in Roman times, but it was something different. But, you know, I look at them all as assassins, basically, the guys at the top. You know, that's basically, they're all out to get each other. And, you know, if you've raced yourself, you know all the moves that you can pull in a car or a bike that you can get away with to kind of stuff the other guy and get and not be kind of held responsible. And you know, there's a catalogue of moves you can do. And now with Valentino Rossi and Jorge Lorenzo and Marc Marquez, I mean, I've been around for 30 years doing this sport, and it's either the best or the worst rivalry, depending on which way you want to look at it. And but Rossi's career has been defined by these rivalries. His first was Max Biaggi, and you know, he would dismantle these guys not only on the track but also off the track. You know, he's the brightest bike racer I've ever known, you know.
When did that kind of extreme rivalry sort of idea start? Because in Formula One terms, I always think the Prost and Senna rivalry is always referred to because it not only defined its era, it changed the sport because Senna introduced that do whatever it takes to win attitude, which we hadn't really seen to the extent that Senna took it to a new level, and then Schumacher took it on to the level as well after that. In your world, when did it start?
I mean, Barry Sheen and Kenny Roberts had quite a big rivalry, but I mean, you know, they could still go out and have a laugh and so on, but I mean, they didn't really like each other. But I mean, the first big one would have been the two Americans, Wayne Rainey and Kevin Schwantz, very different Americans. Wayne Rainey, a very sort of, married Californian, lived quite a respectable life. And then Kevin Schwantz is kind of pretty fairly crazy Texan guy. And they had raced each other in the States. And they, whenever they raced, it would get very physical. You know, they would be colliding and bouncing off each other. And they really properly despised each other, But then I can remember before Valentino Rossi turned up, Schwantz, as not sure if I should say this really.
That means you definitely should.
he had a strong rivalry with this other American rider called John Kaczynski, and he let it known quietly throughout the paddock that he would give $10,000 to anyone who would sleep with Kaczynski's girlfriend, or who could sleep with Ken. So, you know, you get all these really kind of fairly unpleasant things going on in the background that you don't always see, you know, they're not generally talking about on the TV commentary. So, yeah, and Rossi is the king of it, but I kind of think he's met his match with Lorenzo and Marquez. You know, they're both two guys that he can't break psychologically. They're just unbreakable psychologically, and they're pretty difficult to break on the racetrack as well.
Rivalry happens outside the race car as well. When I first drove for BRM in 69, my teammate was John Surtees, who was much more successful, much more senior than I. And the first practice at the practice sessions just gone for ages in those days, all day Thursday, not like they do now. So when it came to the Saturday practice, my first experience of seniority in the team was from John. And there were three or four cars in the garage, and John was talking to the engineers, and he says, I want that chassis and that engine and that gearbox in that car. And I thought, right, okay. And, of course, that rivalry exists today before you even get to the racetrack, and it's called contracts. And you've seen some examples of senior drivers having the right for updates, the use of the spare car, so on and so forth. And the difficulty with that, and you see that in some cases, where a young guy comes in, like Verstappen, for example, if he's under a contract as a junior driver and ends up being quicker, how do you break that contract terms? And, of course, Schumacher was a past master at that with some drivers. So it doesn't just extend to behind the steering wheel. It extends to contract stage.
Okay, I think, because you've got some tea and cake in front of you, that it's a good time to get you to, now with a mouthful, ask some questions. That's perfect, isn't it? We have got a microphone. Has anyone got a question just on the tip of their tongue that they would like to ask? Ah, the gentleman here with the amazing tie. We're going to get a microphone to you. Stay there, it's absolutely fine. Unless, of course, you wanted to sit on anyone's lap.
I'm from Australia, and I'm absolutely delighted to be here. My first question is to you, Derek. Did you race at Bathurst?
Yep.
And what were your thoughts on Bathurst? My second question to you is, Tom, have you been to Bathurst, Darren? No. Tom, I watched you racing at Goodwood in the Galaxy. What were your thoughts on that compared to sports cars?
You want me to talk first? Because my memory's short, I forget what the question was.
Well, I forget what it was too, but
okay.
Okay.
He didn't say was it Bath time yet.
Bathurst, yeah. No, I raced there three times. I drove for Brian Foley, was first in my class in Alpha the first time on that amazing track, and went back again and drove for Ron Hodgson in Tirana and crashed with Dieter Questa, with my fault totally, up on the mountain. And the third time I went and finished second in a Mazda for Tom Walkinshaw, second overall.
So I had a great time there, and it's a great track. Love it, and love the enthusiasm. And it was great because it was just one major race. There wasn't a championship. So you just went and had a damn good time, drove as well as you could. But when you actually relate it to modern day, I mean, I'm sure all of us sitting up here have often gone to racetracks, first time we ever sat in the car, drive it, and go out and race it, and that's how we do it. Whereas in some of the, you know, the major teams these days, you get in it for ages beforehand, get to lots of practice time to get to know the car, which you probably have to with modern technology. But at the end of the day, all you do really is turn the key and drive the bloody thing. You know, but I loved Australia, yeah.
What are your thoughts on our touring car championship we have there now, with the Holdens, yeah. Well, and the Fords, yeah. And
well, all I rem- I follow it if I see it. You know, it's logical, but and I don't go out of my way to see the races because there's so much on racing on TV. But I mean, I love it. I think it's incredible. I think it's great that you have touring cars, if that's the right word, as your number one formula, it seems, in the whole country, and the whole country's behind it. And you've got the manufacturers battling Ford versus General Motors the whole way through. And I think it's wonderful the way it's sat there since the day I was there, racing for Holden myself. So I think it's great stuff. You've got some great names. And the racing is very tough, and the tracks aren't terribly clinical. They look pretty, they're pretty open, and let's have a go sort of thing. I think it's great racing. Have you done that, Darren? Did you go over and do Bathurst? You
must have not been. Bathurst. I've been to. I did the Gold Coast race twice, so with Holden. So, so that was an amazing experience to go down there and just heard so much about the championship and the cars, and then to go down there and do the invitation race was a great experience. Difficult cars.
I did Bathurst on bikes many years ago.
Did you?
And you know, Conrad, this is before the chicane.
Yeah, Conrad Straight.
On Conrad Straight, and it's a switchback.
Yeah.
And as you're going faster, you're pulling the front wheel up over each of the crests, and the last one was just before you break into the left-hander at the bottom.
I'm sure, yeah.
And you're in sixth gear, and it's such a brow that you come over and it just lifts the front wheel right up. And then so you're going on about 170 miles an hour with the front wheel up here. And eventually, they kindly put a flagpole on the brow with a flag flying so you could tell which way the wind was blowing as you went over there, so you know which way to hang off as you went over the crest.
Fantastic.
So, yeah, it was a wonderful circuit on
a
bike.
Wonderful.
Pretty scary on a bike up the hill.
Yeah, I'm sure it was, great. Yeah, through that. Well, I went off at the Dipper, which is that right-hand downhill thing with, like, you drop. If you literally take the apex, you sort of, the front wheels come off the road until get over the apex down to the exit, and that's where I went straight in, of course.
Kind of like the Australian corkscrew, really, wasn't it?
Yes, that's right, yes, but tight, really tight, yeah.
Tom, so the question about Goodwood.
Galaxy.
Mm. Yeah, I mean, I to be invited from Lord Marsh and the team to Goodwood when I was still active some years ago, it was overwhelming. I mean, to see that probably the whole public here have been there, but when I came the first time, it was absolutely fantastic. The year when I drove the Red Galaxy with Michael Steele was absolutely wonderful, and he promised me it's not going to run out of brakes, even though that I felt in practice that already after four or five laps that it was going to do it. But the grunt the car had and tried to get to the lead, and then just make sure to put it enough sideways on the narrow Goodwood that you just hear the cars behind, the Alfa or Mini or BMW or whatever, that they are going behind and have to lift for me. Whoop, 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 and I'm just sideways. And then on the straight, you go again. That was wonderful. And when you are at Goodwood, you feel a little bit. I mean, I've had great fights with Derek, with Jaggy there, and even with Darren. I remember when you drove the Mini and I was in a Cortina. It's wonderful to be there, and you feel a little bit like you were born a little bit too late when you look back at racing those days. And I love the whole spirit of Goodwood. So I hope I will enjoy a little bit more now after I'm retired as well to go to that wonderful event.
Anthony Jenkins has been in touch, and he says, Indy versus F1. You all had success in various forms of circuit racing. Why haven't you ever tried or considered the Indy 500? TK, was the Indy 500 ever flagged up to you to do?
No, I was for 2 years I was trying to get into IndyCar. It was a terrible first time I visited was Toronto in probably 90, 96 or something. I was still driving in Japan, and we lost Jeff Krosnoff, a great friend from Japan, at that very race. And I was there with my pregnant wife. That was not a good help at that point. I later tested for Bettenhausen. We were Jörg Müller, Magnish, and Patrick Carponche. We had a day each at Sebring. It was a wonderful experience where we had a day, six brand new tires and testing, and everything went really well. But the team went with the money, as they obviously sometimes have. So Alumax came in, and Carponche drove a good career in IndyCar. But I have nothing of any... I mean, it was great doing that, and with not doing that, I mean, I ended up at Audi, and I have never been at any place better. So no regrets at all, but it's nice to have tried it all, and it has all been on my sort of idea of going.
Jackie?
Well, I got invited to go to Indy in 71 by a team to look at it with the opportunity. And all the oval, high-speed ovals. And I used to have a lot of accidents as a race driver in the early years. And I looked at that and I thought, well, if I have an accident here, it's going to be 200 miles an hour. So I changed my mind, but I ended up doing NASCAR instead. And it was safer because you had a big tin thing around you. So kept on turning left. I wasn't very good at that either.
Derek?
I did a bit of single seaters before it, but I was at the beginning of that era of the 917 and the Mirage. I got a call, or actually it was Johnny Rutherford asked me to drive in the team. What was the guy's name? Anyway, it doesn't matter. I was going to drive in the same. I was going to drive an IndyCar, but the trouble was that the whole of May you have to go, you know, to stay to Indy. And in the month of May, I was with Ollie. We were doing the sports car races at Spa and Nürburgring. So obviously couldn't, you know, a quarter of the races we did for Porsche were going to be in the month that we're going to be at May, the month of May, driving at Indy. So I didn't go. It would have been an amazing experience because I always liked fast corners, but I didn't do it. And I don't regret it, of course, because I had a great time with Porsche. Thank you very much.
I think we all should say congratulations and doff our hats to Alexander Rossi, who won the Indy 500 the first time of trying this weekend. And he's a top guy, so well done to him. You didn't realise?
Well, nothing in the bloody papers. Has anybody seen the results in the papers?
That's very true.
That's like media's fault again.
Sorry, everybody.
That's the one thing. That's the big difference between Formula One and IndyCar. Formula One has become so big because of the media and because of the show that nothing else really gets any message, any time in the magazines as such, apart from the motor magazine, but the newspapers don't cover it. And of course, Indy's lost its way, or had lost its way big time, in that they split it up and two big heads trying to make their own organisations work. Meanwhile, the internal bits crumble. And of course, Formula One has always kept going with Uncle Bernie at the top somehow, doing such an amazing job, whatever, and he's still there. And, of course, IndyCar has suffered. So, I mean, there's just nothing in the press. I read the paper every day, and there was nothing about it. I didn't know who'd won. I knew somebody... My wife said to me, she said, oh, she's somebody that never won it before.
Until somebody says, I have to stop, I'll just keep on going. Question over here. Can we get the microphone across? Wait 1 second. We want to hear your voice.
Could I ask Jackie Oliver, within these walls, what you made of the result of the Monaco Grand Prix?
Oh, controversial.
I'm a great fan of Ricciardo because he's an Aussie and he gets the job done. If you listen to his interview afterwards, he felt like he's been robbed. And he probably was because the team messed up. I'm really happy for Lewis because... He's a British driver. He gets the job done. I like his racing style, not always the most favourite. And as in the world sometimes, he was very unlucky, but lots of things went wrong for him. So he deserved the win, and what a better one to win it.
Can I just ask everybody one word answer, and we'll start with Damien at the end. Was Nico Rosberg right to move aside when he got the call and let Lewis Hamilton past?
Yes, because... Even though it is an individual sport, It's a team sport because they put so much money into it, and it's about they're driving for Mercedes. He had to do that. And I don't think it necessarily will... sorry, it's not one word, is it? I'll stop.
Go. It's okay, you can keep on going.
I think in that scenario, it'd be interesting to put it the other way around and see if Lewis would have been quite so ready to move over. Exactly.
Sorry,
so that's I think that's the difference between Nico Rosberg and Lewis Hamilton, and it's probably what makes Lewis Hamilton that little bit more special and has the edge, is that he's petulant, he's very difficult, he's a real challenge for his team, but that's part of what makes him brilliant.
Moving along?
Well, I know what, because I talked to the guys, and so I knew what the problem was. They couldn't get his tyre temperatures up. That was the whole problem the whole weekend, and those tyres, those Pirelli tyres, guys, I mean, in Formula One, it's not good, is it? I mean, it's very difficult.
I got the stats through this morning, actually, from Pirelli for the weekend. I won't bore you with it all, but basically the ultra soft, the super soft and the soft tyre all did exactly the same lap time and lasted for exactly the same duration. Well done, Pirelli. There's no one from Pirelli here, is there? Otherwise they're going to be in big trouble. Michelin? Okay. It would be nice to have a bit of a tyre war as well, but that's just me. Let's go home. Matt?
Not just you. I didn't even know.
That's fine. Bikes are good, though.
Your boss is your boss, isn't it? And Mercedes is their boss, so if they say do something, you do it. That's how I feel. It's you know, you're only there because someone has the team has the faith that you're going to do a good job for them. They're the guys that pay your bills. So as much as you don't want to move over to let your teammate pass in that situation, you have to respect the fact that there's 500, 600 people back at the workshop supporting what you're doing and trying to win the championship. So if the boss man says move over, you move over.
Tom, would you have moved?
Yes, in the respect, I mean, I couldn't give a better answer than Darren says there. And actually, it just means that practice makes better, because in Barcelona, when Rosberg moved to the right to let Lewis pass on the left, it didn't work. And this time he would then move to the other side and it worked.
Lovely. Eric.
I mean, I think definitely, yes, he did the right thing. You know, he acknowledged it. But the fact was, he had been out there a while and he knew that the car wasn't quick. And he knew he was holding people up. And eventually, you can't be that thick-skinned that you can't let the other guys go by. I mean, Lewis, was he actually leading at that point, Lewis? Because didn't see any of
it.
He was second. So, and in other words, he was going to go after the lead. So he wasn't necessarily going to win the race, but it's damn obvious he was quicker than Rosberg.
Another couple of questions? Over there. We're just making you run from side to side. We thought you needed to get fit.
That's not running.
No. I thought it might spur him on. Yeah. It didn't seem to do that.
I have a question for Matt and a question for Jackie. The question for Matt is, do you feel that there's a more human element to motorcycle riders at the top level than perhaps you see in Formula One? Do you feel that there's a little bit more dynamicism to the riders? We see a bit more of their emotions. And to Jackie, when you were in charge of Arrows, how did you deal with inter-team rivalries between two of your drivers?
I think we probably do see a bit more of a rider's true nature in bikes, but it's purely a factor of sponsor money, basically. sponsor pressure, media pressure, all these things come upon the sportsman, whatever sport he's in, and you know the more money is involved, the more media is involved, the more you have to mind your P's and Q's, and Formula One is many, many times bigger than MotoGP, so I think that's the way it is. But I mean, in MotoGP we always talk about how it isn't how it used to be, you know, that they used to be, you know, blowing up the toilets in the paddock when they didn't like them and things like that, you know. So and again, that's a factor of, yeah, they could do whatever they liked back in those days and nobody would care. Now, as we've already talked about, you know, even in MotoGP, they're not as happy to shoot off their mouths as they were. So I think it's just a factor of, yeah, it's all our fault. The media's, again, basically, yeah.
Sorry again.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a very difficult thing to do. I wasn't very good at it when I started the team. Back in the 70s, but you have to be very careful. You don't demotivate people. And I think the skills now in Formula One with regard to that are much better. I couldn't help noticing when listening to the interview with Toto Wolff over switching the engineers between one driver and the other. I mean, I wish I thought of that in the earlier days. I mean, it's exactly the sort of thing you should do, because what you want to do is you want the team to work to win no matter who's driving the car. And when you stick a chief engineer with one driver over a long period of time, like Massa has with his guy, that can get in the way. And I thought that was very well handled.
Or a big conspiracy, depending on how you look at it. I only said it. Conspiracies don't exist within motorsport anyway, do they?
No, well, you know.
Right, have we got time for one more question? Have we got one more question? Gentleman over here.
I'd like to direct my question to Derek and to Jackie in relation to the Tasman series. I was at Sandown Park in 68 for the Melbourne round at Sandown Park. And I've read a book by David Mackay that he used to loan his Ferrari to Graham Hill to go and do practice at Warwick Farm in his privately entered Ferrari. Is it true that the New Zealand drivers and the Australian drivers used to really look after and be very friendly and hospitable to the Europeans at the Tasman series?
Jackie, do you want to start?
Well, sadly, I never did the Tasman series. I did the Temperado series in Argentina, so I missed out on that wonderful environment. And Colin sent me there with the Lotus Formula 2 car, and I think Graham went off to Tasman, so I have no experience of that, unfortunately.
Right, yeah.
But Derek does.
Well, he knows I did because he saw it race in Melbourne. But yeah, I did the Tasman series 2 years, basically. But the first year for Ferrari with Chris Amon, we had two cars. Graham Hill, Jochen Rindt, Piers Courage running for Frank Williams. And, of course, you know, the wonderful New Zealand-Australian drivers, including Frank Gardner, Frank Matic and people like that. But it was great. I mean, just fun. And we were going to your real question was we really were looked after. We had so much hospitality. It actually got... We didn't have any time to ourselves because we were so busy trying to placate and make everybody happy, because obviously they'd paid a lot of money to get all the cars, all the drivers, there were only five of us over, but they paid a lot of money out and all the accommodation was paid for by somebody, and we were very grateful for it, but we actually didn't get any free time because we were at, you know, schools and hospitals and all sorts of things all the time visiting people. It was great PR for everybody. We loved it, and I would of course done it again, which I did the second year.
Thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Thank you so much to our panel, Damien Smith, Tom Christensen, Derek Bell, Darren Turner, Matt Oxley and Jackie Oliver. We shall reconvene very shortly. Well, not very shortly, but shortly. And we would invite you to come down and have a look at some of the beautiful vehicles. I will guarantee you that over the next half an hour while you're eating, the sun will come out dramatically and we shall watch some beautiful demonstrations of vehicles going up the hill and back down again. I might have just lied. But enjoy the rest of your tea and please put your hands together for everybody here on the panel. Thank you very much.
Don't forget that over the past 6 months, Motorsport has been delving into an audio archive. Back in the late 1970s and early 1980s, Rob Widdows recorded a radio show called Track Talk on Radio Victory. He interviewed the likes of Bernie Eccleston, Nelson Piquet, Derek Bell, John Surtees, Stirling Moss, and even Motorsport's Dennis Jenkinson. We've digitised all of the Track Talk tapes, and these are available through shop.motorsportmagazine.com. I can't recommend these highly enough. They're amazing windows into the past for only £1.99 per download.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.